back, WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively in Catonsville doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We are at State Fair, the old home day. I've already begun with chicken and waffles. We're going to have a crab cake a little later on. But we have lots of friends stopping by, but we're halfway through a spirited chat with the blessed Irishman, Ron Cassie, coming back from Ireland, talking Wire, talking Baltimore Magazine. Of course, Don Moeller, COVID-free now, from what I understand, but I'm not testing it, is here. We were wiring in Ireland, and we were doing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I guess we pick up, Ron, one of the questions that you raised, and I was struck by some things that you wrote in the article. For example, and I looked at it, and I thought, wow, you don't think about it until you see the numbers. You pointed out that Baltimore City, probably not unlike other urban areas in the nation, lost 100,000 jobs, manufacturing jobs, between 1950 and 1995. 100,000 manufacturing jobs. So that sort of becomes the background for this environment that Simon is talking about. And he was real clear with us, right, Nestor, that could have been said anywhere. It's an urban story. It's a story about the failed war on drugs. And then in your article, you raised the $64,000 question. You say, how has Baltimore fared in the two decades since the city got its first long, hard look on HBO? And people hated this show. Elected officials hated this show.
It was embarrassing, right?
Civic leaders hated this show. How have we fared, Ron, when you step back and take a look at it?
Not well. I mean, the war on drugs and was fought, right, if you want to use that language. You know, the battleground for it was poor black neighborhoods, right? It wasn't kids in Roland Park. And again, you can go anywhere in the country to white suburban neighborhoods or white parts of any city. And so it becomes real, incredibly damaging, you know, not, of course, to individual lives who are getting locked up, you know, the sentencing disparaging for crack cocaine, powder cocaine, things like that. But, you know, all the rights and all the problems that come with getting arrested and coming out, and even, you know, even if you're not prosecuted, you're found guilty, you can lose your home, your job, you know, you're damaging to family, shame involved, you know. But if you do get incarcerated and you come out, you know, you lose access to, like, loans for education or job training or college. You lose access to, like, food stamps. You lose access to public housing. Right, you have less.
It's all
right.
Counterintuitive, right?
Right,
it makes
you
no
have
sense.
Michelle,
so then your option is crime.
Right,
right.
It makes no sense, right?
So, I would suggest, as like after reading material, people pick up the 2010 book by Michelle Alexander, right, "The New Jim Crow: Mass Incarceration, the Age of Colorblindness." Right, so this comes out 2 years after the end of The Wire, and she talks about how, you know, if you're a black man who's been incarcerated, you have like fewer rights than if you were free in Alabama in the 1940s or 50s. You've lost the right to vote, right? You lose all these rights, and the incredible damage of that. And so in Baltimore, we've seen our neighborhoods, right, not just the loss of manufacturing jobs, which, you know, i.e. union jobs that support a whole household or extended
family. That's how I was fed as a kid. My father worked at the plant.
Absolutely.
If that job's not there, I'm not fed.
Correct.
Absolutely. All those, right? So
Western Electric, you're right down the list. General Motors, all those places closed.
Lehman Brothers, all that.
Right.
Yep.
So what we've seen is in neighborhoods like working class neighborhoods like Hamden, white neighborhoods, Canton, Locust Point, their poverty rates have gone down. There's been investment. They've gone up. And in this hyper-segregated, under-resourced black neighborhoods where the drug war was fought, it's like a jackhammer on top of all that, right? Those neighborhoods have gone the other direction. And there's continuing divergence. So poverty goes up dramatically in Harlem Park and Johnson Square and you know, all over East and West Baltimore. So 20 years later, that's been the repercussion identified by a lot of studies about income levels and poverty rates in the different, you know, white L and black butterfly parts of Baltimore that have, after 20 years since The Wire started, you know, now we're like 50 years into the drug war. That's been, incredibly damaging to a majority black city like,
well,
Baltimore.
Ron, your stat, Nestor, listen to these stats that Ron has in this article. I think we know it intuitively, but again, when you see it backed up by data, it takes your breath away. One out of three African-American male men are in jail. One out of three. I think one out of six Hispanic, one out of 17 white. That's it's jaw-dropping, right? It's jaw-dropping. And I don't know how you put together a community back together again with... I remember that old, some of you might have had in college, I can remember the jokingly on orientation that it's a lot of people get married here, look to your left, look to your right, one of the three of you is going to meet your spouse. Well, this is like saying to bringing a bunch of little African-American kindergarten kids in and saying, look to your left, look to your right, one of the three of you is going to be in jail.
One out of three will be arrested, yeah.
Will be arrested.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, and David Simon's right, you can look at Detroit and St. Louis and New Orleans and similar, Rust Belt in Newark, New Jersey, similar Rust Belt cities where there was great migration from the South to the northern cities for jobs, and it's almost like as soon as the great migration is in flux, right, and lives are being black lives are being changed because the opportunities in the North. That's when deindustrialization hits, right? That's when the loss of union job begins. And the first out are the families that didn't have the chance to build the wealth, that the house that you can pass on to your kids and things like that. So
you're not, this is not, again, we're with Ron Cassie, senior editor of Baltimore Magazine. If you're not a subscriber, you need to be. This is the kind of journalism they produce each and every month. This piece was not uplifting. There occasionally are uplifting articles.
Yeah, you're Mr. B. You are a Baltimore positive guy.
Ron's a Baltimore positive. This article did not make me hopeful, Ron. Was it a hard article to write from that perspective?
It was a hard article to write in that it's vexing to discuss The Wire in Baltimore because as we run the piece, David Simon, he used the term stealing life, was using and transforming and doing mashups, but they're real people and also of real murders and real tragedies, and where the corner is this really deeply empathetic thing, and The Wire became so popular around the world that Prop Joe and Omar become like right. memes, and become they're on T-shirts, their faces.
Well, when you have President Obama identifying his favorite character, right? You say, right. President Obama actually had a favorite character.
So the discussion of whether like. How much of this is drama? How much is right. this documentary? The problem with that equation is a lot of it is just entertainment for folks.
Well, that's like I'm going to sit and watch it, and I'm not going to stop it and start it and probably think right. about it a lot. I didn't do that with The Sopranos. I mean, I watched it as yeah. theater. That was a lot different for me, I think, 10 years ago, living in downtown Baltimore. And I said this. Dennis Colatzos and I got into it today on his show, which you can hear 3 to 5 here on AM 1570. We're talking about people not going to Oriole games, right? And they're getting better. I talked about Shohei Ohtani. I want to go next week and see him play. And he's like, a lot of people, and he sells cars right mile and a half from here, Security Boulevard at Coons. He said a lot of people he knows have the I don't want to go downtown carjackings, that thing. I said, Dennis, I lived downtown for 19 years. Knock on wood, like, I never had anything bad happen to me. Now, did things happen? Yes. Did I see police lights? Yes. Did I hear occasionally a gunshot? Yes. But nothing bad happened to me. I didn't want to see something like that and be affected every day of my life afterward about the way you'd feel about hanging out in North Jersey at the Bada Bing. You know what I mean? It was not fictional enough to me
because
in 2008 and 2009.
The center set piece of this is literally up the street from your old condo at McCullough Homes, right? The
right,
courtyard
sure.
at McCullough Homes. I mean, it's literally, so you could throw a football from your old condo to what I'll call
oh, I know
sort
everything
of the center
will look very
piece.
Familiar to me,
right.
But it won't frighten me anymore. But I am trying to figure out the where you are, which is what's the meaning? What's the greater meaning of all this? And I guess having Simon on, having you, the war on drugs failed, and this is the result of a lot of things. But this is an examination of that. The Wire.
The Wire is a snapshot in real time, what was happening as it was being written. Simon was a reporter at The Sun, went back after the word homicide had burned. They're documenting like Martin O'Malley's rise to power. They're documenting the drug war in real time. The Wire is a snapshot. I mean, it's also, there's context to what's happening if you're informed, right? You see the ports in there in season 2. You know about the loss of jobs down there. I think, we had what Michelle Alexander's book helped frame. I mean, even a dozen years later, is you really have to look at the long-term effects of these policies and the idea that every problem is a nail that needs to be solved with a hammer. You know, that we need a more holistic look at issues. You know, we need to look at neighborhood investment. We need to look at criminal justice reform. Right, because the drug war is almost over in Baltimore. The drug war is almost not being prosecuted anymore in Baltimore. Very little bit. Marijuana is going to be legalized.
Well, Ron, your stats, for better or worse, on arrest, that also took my breath away. We went from arresting everyone to where today we don't arrest anyone.
Well,
that's a slight exaggeration, but not much.
Right, the numbers are down to like 12 or 14,000 arrests a year from 100,000.
From 100,000.
But The drug war, right, marijuana is basically legal, almost legal, will be soon. I mean, you can see the time where cocaine and heroin be decriminalized and we'll have, like, safe injection sites so people aren't dying of overdose. I mean, we lost 150 people a year to overdose from the wires being filmed. Now it's 1,000 in Baltimore City.
Well, fentanyl.
And we're not addressing it. We're not addressing it in any meaningful way at all trying to save those young lives.
We just had a Raven player.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Die.
Heartbreak.
A week ago.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, the Ravens need to get on front of this.
We've had a
right?
7 or 8 infold increase in overdose, and we're not addressing that. So what I'm suggesting is, like, the homicide rate in Baltimore is higher than it was when the wire was being filmed. As the prosecutor's drug war has gone down. So ending the drug war is not some panacea that's going to solve Baltimore's problem. It's not going to make us a less violent city, apparently. Right, it's not. It'll keep fewer people in prison, which is great. But you know, we have to look at things like reparations for the harm that was done. You know, the city fights like hell to pay people about wrongful convictions. You know,
well, we have to look at parole and look at it all. Parole and probation. We've had guest on after guest on after guest on.
Well,
Mr. President, how are you?
How are you? Good to right see there. You. Well, we had
good to see you, sir.
Last week, I had the mayor on, and we were talking about this situation in Annapolis where they wind up on the streets. The bad guys wind up on the streets. And we have a cop dragged the other night by a guy with 19 prior arrests. And you know, this happens in the city. So on Fox TV, it's the city. It feeds into all that. But this is a much larger problem than the mayor of Baltimore, the police commissioner
100%.
Of Baltimore.
We have to. I mean, at some point, and David Simon, you know, to his credit, looks globally. I mean, globally, like in the United States, completely at this issue. There's no. We have very. The social contract in the United States, you know, is broken or kind of non-existent compared to other countries, right? Like, our public schools compared to education around the world, our healthcare system compared to. Healthcare systems around
you
the world.
You have a passport to know some of this stuff, though.
No, the right, and, right. And you know, the access to, like,
right.
You know, if you live in West Baltimore, you're taking 3 buses to get to a minimum wage job. You know, the access to affordable, reliable transportation, mass transit, all the social contracts in the United States are not, the social contract overall is not like it is in other parts of the world, and then guns, of course. Are on top of this equation, which
Ron, I heard someone
say—that's an hour of its own.
It's almost said we've got to come back and do it because I do want to get a quick 45 seconds from Ron on a Keith Davis update because our listeners have followed that. But to your point about the social contract, I heard someone the other day say, and they were talking about the inability of poor people to get health care in this country. They were in an emergency room last weekend, and the person sitting next to them. Was in their 20th hour and had yet to be seen by a doctor. They had been sitting in the emergency room for 20 hours. Now that's, I'm sorry folks, if you think that's civilized, there's something wrong with that picture. So that is another topic. You followed it so closely. This Keith Davis trial, this dust up with Marilyn Mosby, she's breaking gag orders. It's a very, very high profile case. He's going to be the 6th time he's going to be tried, right? It's been tried 5, so this will be 6, right? Or is it 4 and going to be 5?
So it'll be 6 times overall related to the original incidents where he was charged with pointing a gun at police and a carjacking, which he was, you know, found innocent of those charges. And it'll be the 5th time for this murder charge. The trial has now been pushed off till next year. He's been in prison since 2015. He was shot at, and this gets lost, more than 30 times by Baltimore City police officers, and then was found that he never had fired a weapon at them, right? And subsequently, he's charged with all these crimes. Just two quick updates is you know, City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby has tried to negotiate, partly after our story came out, as a way out of this, a face-saving way out of this.
She would do an Alford plea,
right? So, which means he would basically say they have enough evidence to prosecute me. And they went all the way down. What we learned recently was the state's prosecutors were willing to go all the way down to 12 years, right? And to drop this and drop all the other charges related to this, right? Well, he served like 7 at this point. So you're talking about 12 years, another year or two at most, right? Time served. So she's willing, and the state attorney is willing to basically let him out of jail if he'll just admit that they have enough evidence. And he won't. I mean, it's incredible. And he won't say, yeah, okay.
Ron, why do so many, and we got to wrap it up. What, Nestor and I have talked to other reporters who have followed this case, good reporters that you would be, that you'd be fond of. They think he actually did do it. So why this, like, you're so convinced. I've told people, I said, look, I know the kind of work Ron Gassy puts in. He's convinced Keith Davis didn't do it. What is the piece of this evidence that's so conflicting that people come to different conclusions?
Well, I'd like, you know, to clarify that and to be as objective as I can as a reporter. You know, Keith Davis was in the area when it happened. There isn't like complete exculpatory evidence, right? Like, it's like proving you're asleep in your room and you didn't do something in your neighborhood, right? Or you're on, right? Like,
He was there. Even the proximity,
right? Because he was at a party. His family there. His girlfriend's there. It's Park Heights. He's there, and he's on his phone the whole evening texting with his girlfriend and wife and stuff. The crucial part of this, I think, is the state is about to try him a sixth time on these charges, and you know it's just a miscarriage of justice, and Sherrilyn Ifill will say the same thing, the former head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund is from Baltimore. There is gross errors by the police department in investigating this. There's been gross, beyond errors, you know, just a lack of integrity from the state's attorney office prosecuting this. They invented and brought a jailhouse snitch out of whole cloth, right, to a trial, even after he was proved to be a liar. I mean, liar about this issue. They all of a sudden, you know, there's video evidence at the third trial that had been discovered by the police department. The case and the trials are just a shambles. And I think what somebody said, you know, it's part of the reason why there's no trust for the state's attorney and the police department. You know, the police officers who shot him, none of them faced any repercussions, right? And the continued prosecution is smart. I mean, the reason it continued, there's been, you know, the first trial was like 13-1 to acquit. I mean, if you keep trying somebody, you may eventually get a win, right? I mean,
six times seems to be a lot.
Right.
If you read our story, there's been no real pushback at all from any of the hard evidence in that story, and about the problems with the investigation, the prosecution.
Well, we're going to continue to ask you to follow this story, come back and update us. If you are not subscribing to Baltimore Magazine, shame on you. You're paying about 10 times too much at the local store. Get the subscription. It's great stuff. And great articles like this every month.
All right. I'm wearing my Coppin State shirt. We're going to Coppin State next. Ron Cassie for Baltimore Magazine, one of the good dudes. Finally, we get together on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let ourselves play. Giving away some Show Me $10,000 scratch-offs here. Minimum $4. Chloe's got those to give away. Our friends at Window Nation. And, of course, our friends at Goodwill who give me the little truck to remind you to clean out your closet and get stuffed out to Goodwill. We're at State Fair. We're in Catonsville. Dom Mo is going to stay with us. We're back for more. BaltimorePositive.com right after this.